You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 5 May. Yesterday was the fifth birthday of this early morning show, 3,500 interviews. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. US GDP, poor, jobs data, good, and then OPEC accelerating production increases in June. Oil is falling. Harris Gore from Grove Point Investment Management. Opportunities that he saw in the markets from that when the US 10-year sold off. Petli Radenhaes, trading volatile markets versus trending. Is there a preferred? I mean, the US was basically flat for April, but that doesn't tell the story because at one point, the S&P was down some 13%. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Warren Buffett to step down following six-decade run atop Berkshire Hathaway. That announced at the AGM on Saturday. Business Day, April new car sales, a pleasant surprise for motor bosses, but consumers opt for cheaper brands as new car prices drop 8.6%. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.5%, NASDAQ up 1.6%, the 10-year a little higher, 4.3%. The East actually mostly closed. We've got Sydney down 1.1%, Tokyo closed for Children's Day, Hong Kong and hence Tencent closed for Buddha's birthday. Commodities mostly red, gold futures 3,265, Brent 5,907, platinum 965, palladium is green, 960. The rand is 1837, Bitcoin 94,100. Top 40 opening call, red open expected, 320 points down or a third of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony now, Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam. Nick, appreciate the time. Let's start with the unemployment data, which came out on Friday over in the US. Non-farm payrolls, 177,000. Expected was what? 130. Unemployment, 4.2. Say what you will about the American economy. If we use jobs, which I think is not a bad metric for the strength, it is still a strong economy.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Morning to the listeners. It was a decent number, and also to add that the previous number, the March number, also revised down from 228 to 185. So yes, I don't know if this is Biden's economy or Trump's economy, as he calls it, but needless to say, U.S. economy churning ahead, and it does make. I mean, obviously, this week we have Mr. Powell and the Federal Reserve about to set interest rates. Mm-hmm. It does make his decision extremely difficult because at this rate, full employment in the U.S. effectively. You're not going to be cutting rates.
Yeah, because I mean, we saw GDP earlier in the week. It was Q1. It was minus 0.3 quarter on quarter. There's some moving parts there. Imports, which surged ahead of the tariffs, those get subtracted because they're not the domestic part of GDP. It's going to be a tough call for the FOMC. I mean, my sense is it's a no change.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you could probably the headline numbers, you'd argue that the US is effectively in contraction, but as you said, a lot of moving parts when you do the actual mathematics. There's a lot of what they call front loading. A lot of the manufacturers obviously wanting to front load ahead of the incoming tariffs, so that did skew things a bit. Yeah, you're right, Simon. I mean, this US, this job is difficult for the Fed. I don't think that they are going to be cutting rates. The market doesn't appear to think so, and it does make Mr. Powell's job a little bit tricky with the political barbs that are coming from the Trump administration.
Yeah, he did start coming back late last week over the weekend, indirectly, but certainly doing it. To change track, we had OPEC over the weekend as well. We knew they were going to be increasing. They've been steadily picking up production. They're looking to accelerate that production increases in June. I mean, good for you and I and anyone else who has a vehicle that requires some petrol or diesel, but this is sending oil. I mean, we've chatted before. This is sending oil markedly low. I mean, I'm not sure what they're trying to play here. I mean, it's weird.
You know, it's funny. I actually, when I was doing some homework last night, looking at this, I was like, this is so weird because, as you said, they did come out back in April when they agreed those bigger than expected hikes. I was like, well, this is just odd because, you know, why would you flood the market? And then once again, coming out recently, like right now, and saying they're going to be doing 2.2 million barrels a day in November. But if you look at dig a little bit deep, it does appear to be a little bit of unhappiness from OPEC's sort of the de facto leader, which is Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And they spoke about punishing Iraq and Kazakhstan for poor governance. I mean, that's a quote. And they said, and it certainly applies to me that they don't want to, they seem unwilling to prop up this market any longer. But on the back of that, yeah, oil getting absolutely punished. And in fact, that if you look at the sort of the price spread between the futures and crude, I mean, it's gone into contango for the first time in a couple of years, and that just implies that either there is absolutely no demand or there's plentiful supply or both. But yeah, good for you and I, but overall, I don't know what picture it paints for the world economy right now.
Yeah, I take your point. Is it low demand or high supply? Probably a bit of both. But we will have ourselves some petrol price, particularly with the rand down at 1830 odd. Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Harris Gore, Growthpoint Investment Management. We have him on the show often. He's got the GIM Liquid Private Credit AMC on the JSE. Harris, appreciate the time. We chatted recently about sort of credit markets and how they were doing. You sent out your latest first quarter update. That was interesting, no disrespect. It's what happened after that first quarter, this sort of first 10 days of April, wild moves in the bond market. Did we see wild moves in the credit market as well?
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me on the show again. I think as you would have seen in our latest quarterly report, we've been sitting on the sidelines for a lot of the past 12 months expecting some kind of crack in the market. What we've seen, especially in the listed kind of private credit market in the US, is that you never quite know what drives the dislocation, but the dislocation inevitably does come. People panic and these vehicles kind of sell off. Now, your question is quite interesting because obviously if you're in a private credit fund that's illiquid, marked at book value, kind of trades at NAV, then actually we saw no sell-off in, call it, the private business development companies, the private credit funds, because these funds essentially held at book value and investors are let in and out at that book value. Yeah. What we saw in the listed market, however, so in the public market, was it just kind of followed the equities. And that's why we like that kind of listed private credit market, because you saw the panic sell on the back of tariffs. It was fairly indiscriminate across the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, and the liquid private credit vehicles. And we were seeing discounts of up to 20-25% on loan books run by your kind of top tier managers. So your Ares, your Apollos, your Blackstones, etc. So very, very attractive, call it, buying opportunity. Obviously, tariffs are still up in the air. A recession is almost likely. It's possibly started already. And the extent of that is unknown. What we saw, though, in the beginning of April is that the pricing in the market was implying something significantly worse than what we even saw in the GFC. So you had this big disconnect between what in reality is a trade war and off the back of a very strong economy and the sell-off, which kind of put the losses in the context of a major global recession, which we saw on the back of the GFC, and the prices we saw in the market were significantly worse than any realized losses from that GFC period. So it's nice to have been through, obviously, a couple of crises, seen how the loan books hold up. We've had a good look at how tariffs impact our loan book. Mm-hmm. Generally, the positives are that the sectors that you tend to stay away from as a direct lender, so the kind of consumer and retail discretionary, your food and beverage, your energy, your cyclical sectors, those are generally sectors we stay away from anyway in direct lending. And they're the same sectors that are kind of getting whacked by the tariffs. They're the most exposed to the tariffs. So, you know, on a relative basis, these kind of larger company direct loan books have relatively less exposure to these tariff exposed industries. Now, that's not to say nobody escapes a US recession, but we think the direct lenders, the large direct lenders, are actually very, very well placed. And these underlying companies are very well placed to withstand a recession. And that's kind of why we invest in that space.
And 20% discount, I mean, that is significantly chunky. I mean, that's meaningful discount to book values. And that really does, I mean, it markedly reduces your risk. And I imagine also jacks up your yield a whole bunch as well.
Yeah, it has to do one of those two things, and generally does a bit of both. And if you think about it across a loan portfolio of over 3,000 companies, you're buying the loans at 0.8 of book value. Mm. If you look at losses through the GFC, I think cumulative losses at the peak were around 12% of, say, your book value. So you're insulating, as I said, against the GFC and some. And if that GFC type event doesn't come through, you've got the pull to par. So these loans are generally 3 to 5 years. If you have a pull to par of 20%, you're earning an extra 400, 500 basis points on top of your 10, 11% yield. So you're getting up to kind of 15, 16% total return number if markets normalize following a dislocation like we saw in April. And that's really why we tend to sit with quite heavy kind of treasury balances, cash balances, when things are overpriced. And as I said, you never know what triggers these kind of dislocations. But what we've seen over the last 15 years is that they do come fairly regularly or regularly enough to kind of protect your downside and reduce your returns if you're patient.
And the key point of it, you've mentioned it, alluded to it. It helps that you've lived through it before because you kind of, I don't know, it's a cool heads, I suppose. The GFC, I think, was my third or fourth market sell-off. And I found I panicked a little bit less. But also having done some of the research beforehand, it's kind of like being ready and waiting, I suppose, is the key point. Patience.
Yeah, it's not chasing the market when everything's hot. And I think we saw a lot of that in the last few years, especially coming out of COVID, a lot of kind of froth and euphoria, and more recently with AI. In this direct lending space, we tend just not to chase the fads. Generally, you want to lend to businesses that have, they don't need to grow into their cash flows. So they've got strong cash flows that enable them obviously to repay their debts. And then you want to lend to them at a sensible LTV with tight covenants.
Yeah.
And you want borrowers that have a real like reason for existing. They've got strong competitive moats. I think our average company has around $100 million of EBITDA. These are kind of, they're leading players in their niche kind of industry and sector. So it's a boring business. You want to be as diversified as possible. You want to lend sensibly. And if you kind of do all of that, then you just want to make sure that you're in the market at the right price and you're not overpaying for these loan books when the market does get frothy.
Yeah, boring is often best. Believe it there. Harris Gore, Growth Point Investment Management. Always appreciate the time.
Give your money smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. Trading, and with your trading hat on, so we're not talking necessarily so much about long-term investing, or maybe that does come into a bit as well. We saw, if I look back at April, the S&P 500 essentially flat over the period. However, if I look at the actual month, at one point it was down some 13%. My question, and I was going to say simple, but I suspect not. I mean, is a highly volatile market better for traders? Is a nice trending market better for traders? Do you have a preference one way or the other?
Good morning, Simon. So I could give you two answers to that question, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or three, right? So there's the long-term investor answer, which is, who cares? Just hold this stuff, right? Just buy and forget about it. Look again in 20 years, you'll be fine. Which for if you're a long-term investor and you're index investing or you're buying blue chip companies, for the most part, that's true, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's the sort of shorter term trader, the CFD trader guy or gal who is sort of actively speculating, using a little bit of leverage. And the reality is that the trading market, this is kind of where the biggest bulk of people fall into, right? Where you're trading CFDs. And you're kind of trading with a time horizon of anything from one day to 1 week as your time horizon. Mm-hmm. This is the market that basically chews people up, right? Essentially, most people are leveraged. I hate to say this, guys. If you're listening, I'm sorry. It's not personal, okay? But most people are leveraged. Most people are very poorly disciplined when it comes to stop losses. And most people are over-leveraged. Right, so they have positions that are too big for their account size. They're unwilling to take stop losses, and the market will push, say, 13% in one direction before turning, and it'll wipe them out. Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get lucky, and you're the guy that catches the bottom, and you make a lot of money. You tell all your friends, and then you know they get led to the slaughter. So it's the type of market where the CFD swing trader needs to be very, very careful in, because often it moves a bit further than what we anticipate. And often, you know, we take too much leverage and it ends up hurting us really badly. Then there's this sort of really intense professional, semi-professional day trading type of client. Now, fair enough, these types of traders are very rare. But there are, if you're in a day trading sort of environment, there are three things that you need to make money. You need volume being traded, and you need volatility. Well, it's essentially only two things. You need volume and volatility, and that's it. It needs to move, and it needs to be able to fill big orders. And in that, with that perspective, the type of market we had in February is perfect, right? That is when day traders make a lot of money, because you can buy stuff, it can move enormous amounts in a given day, and you can get in and out of relatively large positions. So I'll go back to the three things you need. You need to get the right direction, right? Which way is the market moving today? Is there enough of a move, and is there enough, you know, in terms of the size of the move, and is there enough volume for me to get in and out? So if you look at it from that perspective, people who are well-experienced in a professional environment, or, you know, have the right sort of trading hat on, can make a lot of money. Unfortunately, the reality is that a lot of people think they're there but aren't. End up in a position that they get hurt themselves.
Yeah, I take your point. It's that middle group, which is kind of the newbie. And they might be, you know, they might not be such a newbie. They might even, you know, have some skill in it. But it is, and particularly important, we tend to trade too large. We tend to take on too much gearing. I mean, the lesson is, I suppose, until you're in that last group, it really is about downscaling both size and gearing. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but it gives you perhaps longevity, because, you're going to get lucky sometimes, but you're going to get unlucky sometimes too.
Exactly. And just to answer your question, I guess, to give it a sort of final answer for that middle group, which I'm assuming is the majority of your listeners, right? A trending market is actually better, and because it's easier, right?
Yeah.
It's less risky. It's less volatile. It's better suited for, you know, for the swing trader, if you will. And I think that if you like, the reality is it's very tough to get to that last group of the guys who are really making an enormous amount of money trading. But I do believe that most people can get there. It just takes an enormous amount of discipline. So, you know, you have to do a lot of work. Everybody wants to, you know, for example, you want to be a doctor. You've got to study for 7 years, right? Trading is not easy. It's not something that you can master in 6 months. It really, you need to work very hard. It's one of the things that we do is we help people take that journey. But we also have to acknowledge that not everybody's cut out for that, right? So if you do find yourself falling into the, I've got a few simple rules. If you find yourself falling into that sort of middle group, if the VIX volatility index goes above 30, maybe take some trading off. I mean, for me, if the VIX goes above 50, I know, there is trouble in paradise. And we saw the VIX spike to like 60 during April. So yes, that creates an enormous amount of opportunity for the professional. The big fund managers were buying, the day traders were sort of raking in the cash, but everybody else was losing, right? And that's where the money is being made from, is from that middle bit. So as a good rule for yourself, watch the VIX. If it gets over 30, you know, take the week off. play when the environment is suitable for you to make money, not when the environment is sort of against you, right?
I like that, but it is, and it's to your point. It takes time. A doctor studies for 7 years, and even then, if you're going to be a surgeon, it's still process to it. Don't expect to be, I suppose, a pro overnight. We'll leave it there. Petra Redenhuis, Heronia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Trending or volatile markets, or perhaps there's no trading for you. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubukli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.